You know how when they yell cut, they wouldn't stop.
That's interesting.
What?
Yes.
If you were Donna, what would you have said?
A waitress, rather, call the police. And she was mistaken in 90210 for
cops.
Along with your host, Charles Rosen.
But look at that Dean Cake. And Dan probably got the best performance he ever gave.
We're having a meeting here.
Oh, at least there's one person on this fricata set that knows what they're doing.
Larry Mullen.
I had a friend named Craig Richland. There was still cocaine around and stuff. I always remembered him, and I just kind of thought I would honor my coke dealer.
Get out of here!
Pete Ferrero.
Here's what I learned. It's possible Claire would have gone out with me.
That was your takeaway.
So sit back and relax, because it's like totally time for the Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Just hold on to me tonight.
Okay, here we are back again on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. It's been a couple of weeks, but we are back. Chuck Rosen, how are you, man? It's good to see you.
Good, back. Great to be in town. Thought of you a lot when I was in New York, especially the one night. In fact, it was the night after we saw the Sondheim show I mentioned to you, that I had a really shitty slice of New York pizza that my daughter... It forced us to go to instead of Junior's, which is the best cheesecake. It ain't only going to get anywhere. Cheesecake like that anywhere.
Yeah.
And it was really bad. So I was thinking of you, the biggest promoter of L.A. pizza that anyone's ever seen. So.
The best pizza is in L.A. I'm standing by it. And I also had a horrific New York City pizza experience when I was there. And I was like, this is not good pizza.
Shit. It wasn't just bad. Now, I admit it was on, where were we, on 6th Avenue, 7th Avenue? I don't know where it was. But still, it was inferior. I still say the best slices of pizza I ever had, one in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the other in Chilmark, in Massachusetts, Martha's
Massachusetts
Vineyard.
Has got some really good pizza.
I know that pizza maker.
He's gone now. Primo. He was the best.
Primo.
I've been telling Pete, Chuck, that he has to go to Beverly Hills because Mulberry Street has, I think, the best slice of pizza in
Larry Mullen, I'm going to ask you one question. When's the last time you had a slice there?
Within the last 6 months.
Yeah, I went there with
In other words, it wasn't just a slice. I had the whole pie and sat down there and ate it and then brought it home. But it's so thin, the crust. They do such a beautiful job there.
I'm going to have to take you to La Monica's and give you just two slices of sausage pizza.
Sounds good.
Westwood.
I think, you got to go straight cheese, I think, to really judge. But I'll go for sausage. Things are good here on Martha's Vineyard. Waiting for the grandson to be born. Okay. It'll be happening any day. July 6th is the due date. Looks like it's going to be late. So we're just kind of waiting to kind of wing out to Cincinnati.
And they don't care. I know. But you told me the baby's weight 9 pounds?
Yeah, it's going to be a big baby. And, she's going to go over the due date, the doctor said.
Wow. Let's say hi to Brian. Hello, Brian.
These are big people in the Midwest, Chuck. So this is going to make the hope for the Mullen athletic family. Now, it all rides with August John Mullen.
How's everything on Reddit, Brian? Is everybody okay on Reddit?
So. You know, it's funny. I posted because I've been posting clips on there recently of the show, and recently I posted that clip of the famous, you know, if it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, and my God, the people just went crazy. I mean,
the last time we all did a podcast, somehow that audience, that Brenda audience, came at me.
So. At you.
Wait. What was this? What walks like a, I don't remember. I'm sorry.
I remember. I wasn't there.
When Brenda
Did I say it?
No, Chuck. No. This is the television show. Actual television show, 90210, when Brenda confronts Kelly and says, you know what, it looks like a duck, walks like a duck. This is what they're talking about. Do you know
it's
the part
more
of
Brenda Kelly stuff.
That's from the
actual show, Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, that's from the that subplot, right?
Yeah, season three.
Yes.
Dean Cain, Luke Perry, all of them.
They all meet up at the restaurant.
Episodes. Yeah, I think, look, that's the greatest thing in the series in a way, because that's the thing that really is that gets people going and keeps this thing now like a feud going all these years. It's hilarious.
Yeah, we had to lock the comments on that one because people.
Because, I mean, in a way, I have to say, in a way, Chuck, it's very brave of you to have a character as flawed as Kelly Taylor, because, but again, that was Beverly Hills. These were broken kids. They were children of divorce. So I think it's great. You know, that's what was so wonderful about it. And, you know, I know the kids talk on their podcast about, well, why aren't they all friends? Well, who's going to care?
What's in real life?
Why aren't they all friends? Or
No, they're on the show. Why weren't Kelly and Shannon friends? Why weren't Kelly and Brenda friends? Why weren't Kelly and Valerie friends?
What a horrific show. If everybody got along.
Right.
But anyway, that's
They've got that show. It's called Saved by the Bell, right?
Yeah, and you can't get 32 episodes a year out of that. That's for sure.
Everything wrapped neatly in a bow right at the end of the episode.
It's crazy because some people blocked me. This someone that we promoted on this show blocked me. You know, I mean, I'm just get a life, get over it. It's a TV show from 30 years ago. Really, just
Well, I actually since this is a get over it moment, and I got one or two people who saw this and liked it. There was somebody who was saying they were talking about the high school graduation episode, and they criticized it because we didn't show the Martin parents or David Silver's father there, and that was wrong because they would have all been there, et cetera, et cetera. And I wrote back and said something to the effect of, they were all there. They were there. The only difference was they weren't being paid for it, but they were there. You just didn't see them because we didn't pay them to be there. And by the way, you know, you're welcome to come back to Earth One at any time. I mean, this was really the...
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't see your answer to that. That's good.
I mean, it's one thing to be in the Kelly, Brenda... And you know, the only people I think that in the Kelly, Brenda argument that are interesting, and maybe you can put that out there, Brian, in one of your things, and let's see what happens, is, did your boyfriend cheat on you with your best friend in high school?
I mean, this is what I'm feeling, or even
college, you know, where there is more, we're talking about Midwest, a little more sexuality, much more sexuality in college than there would be in high school. You know, I can be truthful of this. I went to Beverly Hills High School. I had a beautiful girlfriend. We even were later than others, but there was sexual activity all up and down. You went to the University of Wisconsin in 1970, and there used to be a line to the movie Goodbye Columbus, which had Allie McGraw in it as the star, and she was a beauty. And the tagline was, every father's daughter is a virgin. And the fact of the matter, at University of Wisconsin, every father's Jewish daughter was a virgin. I mean, it was just the way it was in 1970, 71, with very few exceptions. Thank you, Margie.
Well,
anyway.
People take this very much to heart, all of this. I didn't believe it actually happened.
I have to agree with Chuck. It's a get over it moment. You know, it is a television series. These aren't real people. Characters. Written by this gentleman over here. It's all from the line, but to go so unhinged, and to block.
I did see something very cool on Facebook today, though. There was a picture of Jason Priestley wearing a t-shirt that said 34. That was a 90210 t-shirt that said 34 years.
Wow.
And had all the pictures of the cast on it and this. I said, I want one of those.
Oh, was it a real shirt?
Cool. We have to make one.
I don't know what it was. It was a shirt. He was wearing it.
Probably got it at the convention. Probably got someone.
Maybe someone made that. I think
they're all getting ready to reunite again in Florida.
Yeah, they're going to another bad place, Daytona Beach. Chuck, what do you think?
Oh, Florida. I had to do a procedure. I was at the hospital and was there, and I was, and the assistant was there. Oh no, this was yesterday at the vet, and she said she knew someone who had moved to Florida, and I just said, well, I hope they don't know any. They don't have any friends who are single women in their 20s who are sexually active. You know, the whole state is a. I don't know what it is.
No,
someone can fill in the gap here. It's a mistake, and they don't need, and then the whole place and they don't even believe in fucking climate change. Okay, fine. Here's the hurricane. Get ready. Batten down the hatches.
Yeah, no. Okay. I mean, really, so we're not going to go to Daytona Beach, it looks like. I would go to Scranton. I would go to Scranton or Hartford. I know Chuck likes Hartford. We're just waiting for one of these.
I would really like just to be go to. Here in LA.
Wait. Chuck has family in West Hartford. West Hartford is lovely. Hartford, oh my God, are you kidding me? But West Hartford, yes. Hartford, not so much.
Okay, we're going to play a little ad. When we come back, we're going to get into this. Chuck, you have some stuff of things that pitches and all this stuff. And
I got some stuff. Yeah, let me find it here. I just buried under this book I've got somehow.
We've got the cool guy's kid to talk about. We've got so many questions. The translator for our show from Reddit has a whole bunch of questions he wants to ask, so I'm going to allow him to ask. You're going to love some of these. Okay.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans. Check out all the latest rad stuff from the Beverly Hills 90210 Show Shop. They have everything you could possibly imagine. So, like, go there now, okay?
Barbara Navarro, no relation to Brian, says juniors.
Yeah.
She's asking also about Luminalties. I don't really consider deep dish pizza, so sorry.
Oh, the Chicago stuff? Yeah.
That's kind of silly. Don't do that. Okay. Chuck?
Yeah. What do I got? Well, what I got is this much of stuff. You can't probably see, but it's pretty thick here.
Yes.
And these were the notes, and they looked, if you can get a little closer on me, Peter, you can see if I can get any of this in here. You can see my, where am I, here?
There you go.
Yeah,
there you go.
All the red on it and all the stuff. And what this was, these were running things that I would do, because the difference was, and Larry knows this, and Pete, may, and Brian too, but maybe you have it, but Pete, may you have this. When you're in the room and you're spitballing stuff, there will be somebody taking notes and they will type it up for you. Amazing. So that's what we had then. So these are all Chuck's things, this, but it was in the writer's room. And I got one from 5/24/91. So that would be coming after our successful first season, what was coming into the season. You know, we got to get ready. We're going to be on in July. This is the pages that came out of that.
This is the second sophomore year in high school.
That was the year we were going over to doing it over again. Exactly.
Chuck, who's the person writing it down? Who's the person typing it up? Who's the person in the room?
Well, the first year, it was a real nice guy named Joe. And he was very, I learned, Joe said the most important, one of the most important things to me anyone said in my tenure there, in the 5 years I was there, on the first day I started, Larry, what he said to me is, when you talk, remember, anything that you ever say to Renee Kramer, who was Mr. Spelling's assistant, you are talking to Aaron Spelling. Do not ever bitch to that woman about anything. And I never did. So that was.
I think you passed that on. That was common lore by the time I got there.
And Joe was pretty loyal to, was very loyal to me. He was a former assistant to Doug Kramer. Okay. So that's why they offered it to me. And he really knew shows and stuff. He was very, became a publicist after he left 90210. When we were doing this, we had hired some Joe. The one thing he did not do is he put me in with someone who was just not mature enough to do the job and had to let go. And we asked Paul and Betty, do you have anybody to bring over? And that was Christine Pettit, and, you know, who's been on our show and who's just terrific. And Christine would be the one that would be doing that, or possibly even more. I'm wrong about that, but it would also be a woman, a really nice woman named Sherry Ramsey, who was really the script typist, as it were. Mm. And isn't that right, Larry? Wasn't she? She was the script typist.
I don't remember her so well, but I, you know.
You know, I know it is. It was her because I'll tell you why. Someone asked me very early on in 90210, what was your what kind of software do you use? And I said, I use Sherry.
That's that was right. I was going to say, Chuck was not a big typer. He was not going to the computer much.
No, remember, my loan out
company was under Chuck. We had to
that is exact. My loan out company is called Can't Spell, Can't Type Inc.
Let's see these storylines.
Okay. So, anyone know where do you get a job like this, typing up a writer's notes?
Yeah.
It's a good question. Where do you get a job?
Word of mouth.
Okay, move to Atlanta, move to Atlanta, move to Vancouver, move to, where else would you go? Don't move to Texas. Forget about that. Mm. New Mexico has made another commitment to it. The people in LA right now, this is not a great time to be in Los Angeles, but I'll tell you what, neither was it while we were making this TV show. You know, there's a lot of financial problems in the city at that point. Fortunately, we were impervious to it because we were making the show, and then of course the Rodney King breaks out, and OJ happens. I mean, it was a tense place.
Yes.
And always really kind of, but you know, the business after the strikes. I mean, the business is not nearly back to normal, and you read paper, think about this all the time, don't you, Larry? You see this, right?
Of course. You know, yes, I see that all the time. It's disappointing.
I got a very talented daughter, and she is like everybody else. You pitch, you wait, you pitch, you wait. They can, you know, the companies have, when it was the network business, they had to do full slates of shows that they would deliver every fall. There is nothing.
So that meant May was pilot. I mean, it was just a very.
That's right. And there is no urgency in anything that Netflix does, Hulu does, Amazon Prime. It really doesn't matter. They're not on the same kind of time schedule. Therefore, you wait and you wait and you wait. It's a miracle to get something done unless, you know, you've got multiple commitments like a Shonda Rhimes or, you know, the others, Ryan Murphy. Yes. Anyway, I'm looking through them, and you know, one of the things like that we write down, number three, you can see a line through it, is Brenda and pregnancy as follow up to Spring Dance, issue of birth control and trust between mother daughter. And that's interesting because it was really about the father, it wasn't about the daughter, but either that someone made us in doing that, but that was one that was.
We're not doing it.
This is an interesting one for our LGBT fans as well. One of the mouse has been crossed out is number 10, which was gay themed sexual confusion, which would be Jordan Booty. And it was a network that told me early on, the first time that we pitched this, the guy told me, do not do any gay stories. They're a turnoff. It's a turnoff.
Barry Dillon was head of the network.
I won't say who this person is, but truthfully, I can't even remember his name right at this moment. But he called me back a year later and apologized. He was having it was a tough place to work, Fox Broadcasting, in those early years. Mm. You know, someday Sandy Grushaw is going to write that memoir. And
I would love to do a podcast with Sandy Grushaw getting into.
Oh well, you have his. You know where to find him. You know.
There is a talk that Barry Diller would buy Paramount, which would be good for us.
Maybe he'd restore the music. as a way to thank us.
He would do the right thing because he went to Beverly Hills High. He's a Lonsman.
Chuck.
But the interesting thing is, that the guy that who did that got told me that got fired, and who was brought in was Jonathan Littman. Incredibly successful, a nice rise at Fox, but becoming Bruckheimer's partner and being involved with all of the shows there, had a charmed life and in that way and in getting the stuff. But he allowed it to happen, and we did the stuff at the beach with our friend David Lasher.
I was going to say.
We were able to put that together, yeah.
Wasn't that the David Lasher character?
And that's what someone says, yeah.
Yeah.
We knew... there's a great venue in Los Angeles, the Troubadour, that's been around a long time. I guess the things that are most famous about it nationally would be it's where Elton John's breakout concert was in 70-71. It was when Elton John went from obscurity to number one.
Yep.
And it's where James Taylor opened for Carole King.
It's still there, right?
I was at that. I was at that show.
I took Pete there.
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been there. Yeah,
We saw Lucero.
He wanted to use it as a set, and I don't know if they said no or what. Like, I wouldn't have been interested to go to the Whiskey because I didn't go to the Whiskey.
Love the Whiskey.
It wasn't that expensive to go to the Troubadour. It was right on the border of Beverly Hills, West Hollywood and Beverly Hills, and all the great acts came there, and my mother, I didn't get an allowance. I'm a Beverly Hills kid. She would hand me money on a Thursday. I'd go right to the Troubadour and buy tickets for the following weekend. And when I dated in high school, that's where I took it. That's where I took girls. That was the Troubadour. I saw so many great acts there. So I wanted to do a payback. I'm like, I love Jeopardy. We're going to the Jeopardy set.
Right.
I love, we didn't do Dodger Stadium, did we, Larry? You didn't do it either, right? Too far.
I'm surprised you haven't done Dodger Stadium.
Larry David did the famous one.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
So there was Darren Star, one of his ones that he had pitched early on that was here, was the story of the physically challenged, which became the episode 11 in season 2.
Yes.
With the cousin on the mountain, which we've talked about relative to Jason's performance, which was the only one that the crew, when I ever saw that the crew just stopped and clapped.
Yeah.
It was pretty great.
Larry, is everything okay, Larry?
No, my leg just kind of got into cramps. I'm just walking around for a second.
Okay. I understand it.
I'm not biting yet.
I mean, I feel like you're in the writer's room right now, Larry, standing up, ready to do
it. Well, he's ready.
One thing I want to make clear, there was no whiteboard. We had no whiteboard in our place. We just had ideas in our heads.
Oh, well, we even got our typist, the guy that usually does the recaps. We got our typist on duty.
So season 8 to 10.
Everyone else typed on a computer. So, the thing was good. It was good to have that.
Larry, after you guys left, they did bring a whiteboard. Seasons 9 and 10 had a whiteboard.
That's the problem. You bring the whiteboard and you're dead.
As soon as the whiteboard comes in, that's a problem.
Go ahead. Yeah, no question. Let's see. Then we wanted to do something like a high school. We were going to get David into like doing a show on campus about he'd be the host, like he was the radio host, but it was originally connected to it was like there was a show on TV at the time called Loveline, and it was like bringing things together. Okay. And that could have been anything. We have interracial dating or this, but just the, for me, again, what I was looking for, I don't know how it was with you, Larry, in 6 and 7. I was looking for places and things, but particularly, remember, this was not a serialized TV show at this point either. They kept them as individual episodes as really old TV, classic TV. So in that, it just was something, could I pin something on? And you would see that like, oh, it's valid. We did it with Holidays. We can build the episode. This is what's going on. This is what's there. This is what's what you know, that was almost more important to me because you get promotion out of that kind of stuff too.
Interestingly enough, Chuck, Bumblebear 7 says David did a Loveline radio show in season 9.
Was that a Loveline though? I don't feel like that
I think so. Yeah, no, yeah. He was taking callers and answering questions.
Well,
for
yeah.
sure. Yeah, I mean, and honestly, Brian's podcast, Oldish, which is back now, is sort of like in a way Loveline's, right, in his real life. Like they're taking calls, they're giving advice to this generation and whatnot. So I mean, it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, you could see, even my David, even bringing up the Troubadour story, you could see that it already moving from 1 to 2, we were trying to find things for David Silver.
Right.
Because he knocked us out. You knocked it out of the park. We had no idea he could dance. Nobody told us he could dance. So you get to Spring Dance and you get to see how talented he is at that. And all of a sudden, what can we do with him, as we knew that we would be splitting off from Scott. We didn't bring him back for that season 2. But you have things here. Here's a thing like Brenda having an eating disorder. We eventually gave it to Kelly in season 3. It was right. I see a number 21 on the list was plotting. How about Kelly's mom and David's dad? But that was wow. 21 on the list. That wasn't in the, you know, we had drama tryouts. Dylan can be a factor. That was the fourth episode, one that, like, why don't we try on this? The Haunted Beverly Hills House, Halloween. Halloween's a big deal in Beverly Hills. And there's a movie, if any of you guys ever want to see this, it's called the Knights of Beverly Hills or Beverly Hills Knights. Beverly Hills Nights, it wanted to be one or the other, and it was about a Halloween that happened in Beverly Hills on 1968, which was an incredible egg fight, and we remember, if you remember, Scott and,
yes.
and right before the gun episode and that Halloween, they go out trying to find it again and relive it, and it's not there. Because the next year, 20 police cars were raiding on that corner to not have anything like that, where the egg fight went on for about 15 minutes. It was phenomenal. Anyway, just reliving some stuff
the
here.
One thing that never appeared on any list was plastic surgery.
What it? Oh, plastic surgery?
One of the characters getting plastic surgery.
Well, there's a reference to it in the pilot.
10 years of the show, and no one in Beverly Hills.
Pilot, I didn't write. I wasn't a typewriter on the pilot.
I think it was a taboo subject.
What were you gonna do? You're gonna have a. I mean, what would have been an interesting thing if it was someone is someone at the time, particularly with such big knockers that they decide to get a blood breast reduction.
Exactly.
But the story would have been about a guest star. Remember, season 1, let's review one thing for everybody on this with some of this early stuff here. Is that season 1, it was a Walsh family show. Season
right.
2, it was high school hijinks. Season 3 was graduation, senior year. Season 4 was Brenda's last year. Season 5 was Valerie's first year. 5 different television shows.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard. The continuity was really something that, yes, those of us who stayed and over and part of it, the Wassermans for certainly. You know what today is, right, Larry?
No.
This is the day Steve fell off the boat.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
I saw Shira posted something, right?
Yeah. Sad day. And it ended up being that in that same day that I had my heart attack lit, my gift, my 90210 present 6 weeks after I left it, you know.
So that was a couple years before. Because I remember, Chuck, we were doing Wind on Water at that time, you and I. We were doing the Hawaiian show.
Yeah.
with Steve. You're talking about Larry. With Steve.
Terrible. It was a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, Steve was wild.
He was a good colleague. He was a good friend. I can charitably say he would get distracted. But yeah, he was a good guy. And I miss him.
He brought the schmaltz.
Yeah, any you can know that one when it. I don't think there was any more pleasure for Steve doing this show is that when he'd give a monologue to Joey Todd. Am I not far off, Larry?
That's really cool. Yes, the thought of it, I love. Yeah.
I got so many of these, and this is one I have to say.
I'm gonna get off on this one.
Last one. This was one that I'm surprised we didn't do, and I think it probably didn't happen because they thought we would be ripping off Jump Street, which had already had its run. But the idea that Brandon gets exposed as a narc on campus. I wanted to do a narc on campus. That was always when I went to Beverly Hills High School. You're a narc. You know. Because Bot was coming into the community, you know.
Totally good storyline. You know, that was a good usable storyline.
And I'm surprised we didn't.
I want to say one thing about Steve. And I know for Pete's sake, when I remember we were in a limo picking up Steve and Jessica, my wife and I, and because we're going to the Rose Bowl for the Rolling Stones show, and Steve gets in the back and says, "I wish we were going to a Joni Mitchell show." Steve is kind of sweet, you know what I mean?
I love it. Yeah, he sounds like a character. I wish, you know, we could have him on the show and all the other people that are not with us anymore, you know, too. And people always talk about Luke, you know, he would have been great on this podcast as well.
Because you brought up Luke, I do want to say to you guys that I am being asked to, that Jason is producing a documentary about Luke.
Oh, amazing. Yeah.
With a good group in Canada. In Vancouver, and Margaret, our friend Margaret, is the consultant.
Oh, great.
So I've been asked to do it. So I talked to the director yesterday, who I liked to, on the phone. We had a nice conversation. And, you know, it's not a documentary about 90210, but it's, you know, they were interested in my point of view, which, again, is slightly different than, you know, the adoring fan point of view, because I was the management that there would be rebellion against, because he wasn't going to do that with Aaron. One thing I know I'm going to do, Larry, on this is I found one of my old sheets here, which comes from the press. Janine Jones, I think is the name, or Janine Jones, she was at Fox. She was their press person. She was really very good at her job. And she sends a full page to the Spelling Company telling us that we're on the cover of 20 Teen Beat magazines, and they list all the Teen Beat magazines, which ones and what the articles are. And Luke and Jason were so bummed by that, but they weren't gonna, how could they talk to Aaron about that? They could not. What they were really mad about was that, as if I had any input in that. I was doing a different world than Teen Beat.
Right.
Teen Beat, you know, David Silver and Scott, maybe a little bit in the first season, but not much, you know.
8 o'clock show, 8 o'clock show.
Yeah, they came right,
I have some questions from audience fans that wanted to ask some things. So was there any pro athlete you tried to get that you couldn't get? I know you got Bonds, Young, and Long.
Bonds, Long, Howie Long, and who was the third one?
Steve Young.
Oh, Steve Young. Well, Steve happened after I was there, but he was logical because he was a terrific football player and he was connected to Fox.
It was through Lee Steinberg. Spelling was friends with Lee Steinberg, so he set it up. He actually teed that one up for us.
Was there anyone else that you tried to get?
Well, the truth is, and this Howie was perfect, and I'm a big fan of Howie and remain so. I like his you know, some of these guys, they seem a little long in the tooth when they talk, but he's certainly vital. And his son plays football too, right, Larry? So
he was really retired too. Chris Long, he won a Super Bowl with the Patriots.
Yeah, really, really in good. But I we went after Bradshaw.
Yeah,
we went after Madden.
Yeah. I'm sure. I'm sure for the first episode of season five, we went after Bradshaw because that was the year that Fox got the NFL on Fox.
That's what I wanted. I to get Howie Long, I had to just be an asshole. I had to say to Fox Sports, Terry Bradshaw's not going to do it. Who is? You know, we're Beverly Hills 90210. You're coming onto our turf here, guy. You're going to be part of it. You want our promotion. You want young people to start watching your fucking football game. I wasn't a much of a football. I'm a much bigger football fan now than I was then. You know, I'll tell you one Steve Wasserman story that's great, if I would, and then I'll hand it over to the author. Here it is. My lawyer Karen was a lawyer, an entertainment lawyer before she had kids, right? She had kids and she stopped and became the writer on 90210, but she was in a big law firm. So I was blessed to have a very good lawyer named Mickey Slobodia, who was there to negotiate my contract for me and along with my agent. And Mickey had another client, because he was very well respected and could do really big deals and whatever. I was lucky to have him. His client was Giorgio Frontieri, who owned the Rams. So he invites Steve and I to go down to Anaheim. And for me, backstory, the Rams used to play in Los Angeles. And the day they left, for me, they died. I didn't care about them. I wouldn't think to do it. Wouldn't watch it. They, you know, room for the 49ers, and the Rams were playing the 49ers, and Steve and I didn't care that much, but we were not for the Rams, and you're sitting in the owner's box. And both of us, in the same way that he wanted Joni Mitchell and not the Stones, both of us wanted to get out of there at halftime, you know, and the Rams were terrible and losing badly. So, you know.
From Chris, question for Charles. Shannon said on her podcast Monday, the actors on 90210 were working 18 hours a day, and she voiced her opinion, and someone from Spelling told her to shut up and get on her mark. Do you recall that happening?
I do know. An 18-hour day, Shannon would probably, you know what? We can transcribe this, and you can get this to back to her. But she's not 100% wrong at all. One of the problems that we had labor-wise in the start is that the first producer, my friend Jeffrey White, negotiated the contract that the Spellings wanted, which basically said to the non-union crew that there was a two-hour window and they would have to give us those 2 hours, but don't worry, we'll never go over this 14-hour days. And yes, we did. This was not that experienced a crew in this. So there were some terribly long days. And Shannon may remember on the episode Every Dream Has Its Price Tag, season one, second episode we did. And it was I went after Melanie Mayron, one of the actors on 30-something, who had directed an episode, and I thought she was a terrific director. And I went afterward and said, will you direct my show? And that was going to be heresy there, and it wouldn't be good for her. But her girlfriend became our director in this, but she was a little inexperienced and, you know, was trying to do art, and I had to step in when we hit the 18th hour and have them do the scene, and they would finish the scene, and I would turn to the DP and I said, was it in focus? Is it all right? Moving on. And we cut that. That would have gone on another hour and a half, and I would have been burned in the Spelling Company. It went on for about 8 minutes.
Chuck, was this Claudia Weill?
No. It was a torturous eight hours.
Who was the director? 8 minutes. Fortunately, only 8 minutes. But I had to take over a set and say, you've got it. What shots did you want to do? Set it up now. We're not changing the lighting. Just do it now. And I became, you know, like, hello, I'm making a documentary here and I'm the director, producer. This is what we're doing. And yeah, I wonder if Shannon remembers that. That's the only time I consciously was on the set and remembered it went to 18 hours. I'm sure Mr. Spelling would be appalled to know that someone from the representing the Spelling company said, hit your mark and let's go.
Yeah.
And I sure hope it wasn't my friend Jeffrey. I doubt it would be, but you could it's see possible. Under the flame pressure and flame of passion, maybe somebody did. I don't but certainly we got a lot better at making this TV show. It was a 7-day show. We were bringing them in at 6.5, unless it was a bigger production. So, you know, we learned from those mistakes.
Chuck, who's the director? Who's the director?
Okay.
Was it CW?
No, it wasn't Claudia. Okay. It's not really.
Good.
Claudia wouldn't do my show. What I'd asked her in later in that because it wasn't, it wasn't a high end operation.
Larry addressed this one earlier today, but I'll give you a chance to address it again. Denise Young wants to know, why did the actor who played the Keg House president change 3 times? We've talked about that a little bit here.
Well, the first one is,
go ahead.
That's exactly right. You do not, when you have a guest star and you bring a guest star in, you don't control their time unless you make a multiple deal. And we were not prepared to do that with certain actors because we didn't know what episode we would need them. And then we put it together. We need them. We're going to do this. And the guy's not there. He's not available. That was one actor in the episode that we did with the guy coming out. He didn't want to play that part. We had to honor that. We didn't own him. And he's a very nice actor, but
He didn't want to be a gay
character. Correct. He didn't want to be there for that reason. So then we got the third guy, and there we are.
Let's see. Aaron Stevens says, back during the original airing, I remember rumors during season 3, we've talked about this a bunch the whole time, that as the original cast would move on to college, a spinoff show would stay focused on high school.
Well, that's what I would have done.
Possibly focus on Nikki, Sue, Herbert, and Gil, and that got axed, and that's why everyone except Gil was quickly written out. Any truth to that rumor?
Wait, put that up again? What?
They said Herbert, Sue, no Herbert.
No, but you know, David, we did think about keeping David back. And had we done that, Gil Myers would have stayed there, and Mrs. Teasley would have stayed there, and we would have brought Nikki Witt back for sure. But Eric didn't want to do a high, and you know, we could have even kept Tori there if he wanted another year with her in high school. But he looked at it and went, these people look great together, and it working, keep them together and move it on, you know. So we met each other halfway, but it seemed logical that we had all of this Beverly Hills High School goodwill, and the Spelling company really could have, and I once tried to do it years later, but we could have started over with freshmen. That, you know, the big man on campus was David Silver, and else the freshman. And there were plenty of rich kid stories to do. Plenty.
Yes.
I mean, just like any, if you're going to get into a sub cult, you know, strip soldier. So I don't know why, but I almost everything that Aaron did on this show was, what would be the financial benefit, but even higher than that would be, how is it going to impact Tori? And I picked that up, you know, he would write the line. It was pretty clear. There was no doubt as we were moving to 3 to 4. No doubt on that.
Mm-hmm. Alicia says the actor who went on to play the actor who played Herbert went on to a different world, so he wound up getting.
Yeah, he was great. He came on our podcast. He was perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really loved the.
Okay, this is some questions from our translator. First off, I've heard the term license fee come up in several podcasts. What does it mean to have the lowest license fee? Is that the lowest budget?
Yes. Okay. But that's the fee
the network covers. That's the fee the network covers to the studio. Anything else spent over that, the studio has to pay for.
Yes. So how the Spellings did that finance was they took that sum from the network. But because it was Fox, they didn't have to pay. Fox didn't have to pay as much as CBS, ABC, and so they didn't pay as much for the because they couldn't deliver, and you know that aspect of it. And then Spelling, where could he sell it in the foreign territories? And they combined that money, and it was we begged them to put in more, and they didn't, and that's what almost caused strike. It caused the that 18-hour day problem that happened in that second episode. I really hope it didn't happen much after that. I don't think so, because we would be really severely penalized to go over 14 hours. And by that point, Paul Wagner
turned around.
And we had Paul Wagner producing our show, and that was just not going to happen. He would tell, they put it this way, we would cut material before we'd go into 18 hours. But that's not true for the first six. So she's right about that part.
Okay.
And by the way, the production company of record was not Spelling. It was Propaganda in those first six, that first season.
I just had the thought that the translator is going to translate their own questions at some point. So that's entertaining. In episode 128, Diane Young says she got a Letterman. She got Letterman jackets during season two. Did the jackets have the 90210 logo on it?
Oh, the jackets were very cool. They were like a really nice varsity kind of jacket. And in very small pink letters, it said 90210. I'll have Karen bring it down. She still has hers.
Oh, that's amazing.
I wish I had mine. I have no idea what happened to it.
Is the actor that played Cameron, Daryl Thomas Utley, actually deaf? This is the deaf kid Yes.
Yeah.
Did 90210 get nominated for an award for the Deaf Cameron plot?
Yes, we did win an award a few times for using people physically challenged, and that most of the actors that would be brought in, like our friend Professor Finley, these all came from Paul. Paul knew the mother, knew the child, knew that he wanted to act, and you know, we thought it was great opportunities. And in fact, on the episode that we were talking about with the gay frat president, the other story in that was about David Silver getting lessons in piano from a blind piano teacher. And they gave us an award for that. And then they took the award back because the piano teacher wasn't blind.
Oh, boy.
The actress,
Great. Who wrote the line, "What makes you think you're so damn irresistible?" From two
Karen Rose.
Karen. Okay, here's one in the weeds. In episode 133, Charles says he's never been yelled at like the way Edgar Sherrick yelled at him. What did they work on together?
Did you ever meet Edgar, Larry?
I haven't. You know, I know the name certainly, but I don't have no picture of him.
He's the kind of person that really will let you know within the first 2 minutes I went to Harvard.
Yeah.
You know, Edgar was a former president of ABC. Edgar made some real, go look him up. He made wonderful movies, interesting, big, important miniseries. In fact, to start reading Larry's book, I put down a book by Doris Kearns Goodwin. Writing about, there's stuff on Martha's Vineyard. I'm going to give you the book when I'm done with it, Larry. You know, because they lived on the vineyard. He did, the late husband. And anyway, he did the miniseries on the Kennedys based on Doris Kearns Goodwin. He did big deal projects, and he hired me to do an original one for him, and that's the one that was called Southern California. And that was followed three families from 1876 to 1939.
Love it.
Three parts of the mini. So I basically wrote a novel because I had to create all the stuff. Mm. And part one was really good. I still think people should do part one. If I was a different cat, I would have gone over and tried to figure out how to tell the main story in part one. It has some legs to it, but I never did. But it was a big project, and Edgar, he was just furious at. He was an older closeted gay man, and he was just, there was a lot of frustration in his life. And at one point, I'm just not going to be talked that way. And I stand up, and he yells at me, "Sit the fuck down!" Oh my God, you know. And then he proceeded to scream at me in that intensity for, I don't know, a minute. It felt like eternity, but, you know, maybe it was just a couple of minutes.
Okay, some more here. These are Reddit ones, Brian. Do you want to read this?
Sure. Wish Upon a Dream 91 asks, the Val faking her suicide attempt, was that meant to be manipulative? Because I truly don't think she did when they're in 10. This came up recently when we did the rewatch for that episode. Some people were starting to think maybe, you know, it wasn't a genuine suicide attempt. It was, you know, just Val trying to manipulate Brandon's emotions.
Well, I mean, I think people in desperate situations do desperate things. And so, yeah, there's a bit of that in it. We always intended that. And, you know, yeah, that would be, but it doesn't mean she wasn't going to do it. But, yeah, I mean, she's, you know, when she's trying to make a statement, she's trying to create action. It's a cause and effect, you know.
And she did this, her attempted suicide was in season 7?
No, finale. 6, I think. Season 6?
7.
Seven, okay, yeah. It was over by the Shangri-La Hotel. It was over by the Santa Monica Bluffs, overlooking the PCH. It was, you know, it was pretty good, well-shot.
Yeah, it's a nice hotel.
I think it was a Michael Lang episode, as I remember.
Definitely. It had the most complicated things. You always gave Michael Lang.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, go ahead.
Brian. Does It Matter 77 asks, why did they have Brenda forgive Kelly so quickly after the whole Dylan thing? It makes zero sense that she would go back to being friends with her after the whole debacle.
We've gotten into this so many times.
I know. This is one I always hear.
Why your own answer? I don't know. I'm not even going to
get along. You know,
pass.
Pass.
Totally Owl 03. What direction was the Jim and Cindy wanting another baby supposed to take? Was that scrapped because they realized no one wanted that or because the actors left? Was the idea really to give them a baby?
It's an idea. You know,
funny. It's on one of these early sheets because the Carol Potter, I believe, was also even prior to Gabby trying to have a baby or had just had one, or I'm not quite sure.
Exactly. Fascinating.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was just what they were thinking about. That doesn't mean it would have to be real or anybody would have to be pregnant. But, of course, that was their idea. And it wasn't, you know, the show really wasn't going to be about it. Didn't one thing we watch these episodes, the watch alongs, Larry, you know, us and Pete, and we're always impressed by the quality of the acting of Carol and James. But the fact of the matter is that they were not often driving action. And you know, I'm sorry. I mean, I would have probably today. And you have to know, if you're not in the prism of 34 years ago, Jim Walsh would be being written very differently.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Walsh could not function. I mean, he would be such a tyrant in the world today if he was behaving in the same way. So for me, anything I ever did, I wanted to be like, it was a reference point. You're creating some statement, and here it is. And so you want a window on the times it was.
Mm.
You know, somebody, I was talking to someone about the show recently, and they talked about, you know, the idea that we referenced the riots.
Yeah.
What TV, you know, we were about it. You saw the impact of the city. You saw the impact of the fires in Malibu. You could, you know, it was, and you know, and that continued. You guys went out to the Rose Bowl. You went out to other places. Did you ever shoot the Hollywood Bowl there?
We shot the Hollywood Bowl. Yep, that was a Dave Koz episode.
That would be fun. Yeah, it'd be a fun place to shoot.
There was a long-winded.
We did the Queen Mary. We did.
There was a long-winded red question about interracial couples and whether or not you pitched any of that. And
well, of course, I without even knowing that you would have a question like that, I was going to write it on the top. That's what the love line was going to be about. And that was a pitch from Jordan. We tried it with the Ashes. And, you know, the hard part about that was that at that time, you know, we did not any time we veered out into more our race relations episodes or things like that and trying to diversify a little bit more, none of them were the number B breakthrough that it was like, we got to come back and we got to do this right now. We didn't get that with the Ashes, even though, you know, I wanted to spin that off. I think that would have been an interesting show, that family. But spelling wasn't up for it.
Okay. Let's talk
about the ratings were great. So that
let's talk about Larry Mullen's book.
Yes. Yay, Larry.
How long did it take you to write the book?
It took me I guess a year, Chuck.
And I just want to jump in just for just five process, because I'm so impressed with this and so great. I really like the art, how you do things. Very interesting.
Yes, the book is
going back and forth in time. It took me a moment to, where am I? But then when I'm there, I'm right there. You know, like it a lot. You had great quotes from our cast in it.
Yes. What's great is, Larry, everyone can get this book on Amazon, right? They can go to Amazon.com right now. The Pool Guy's Kid. It's out.
You know, it took me a year to write, Chuck. When I do these books, it's different than when I would write scripts. It's just a different process. Because in scripts, there's so many people who come along on the ride that you have to have outlines and stories and then, you know, drafts. So this way, I'm playing against myself. It's a little bit of a competition to try to tell a story and to entertain myself in a way. Once I kind of have the overall thing, then I just kind of, I guess, you know, they say there's two kinds of writers. There's a plotter or a pantser. Well, so on these, I guess I'm a pantser. In other words, by the seat of your pants. You kind of basically part of the process. So that's that part of the process, which for me keeps me engaged and excited and frustrated and challenged, I guess, and alive, so to speak.
This is going to play right into the fans of 90210's wheelhouse, right? This is a book.
I hope so. I mean, only one of the main characters is from Beverly Hills, but because I don't want to do the same exact. I mean, I just can't do that. But yeah, it taps into the same themes. I don't only have a triangle, I have a four-sided triangle, which I guess is a quadrangle, you know, because it's really, I guess, in a way, it is kind of a little bit of a boy fantasy, too. I mean, because it's kind of, the main character is a guy, and you know, he's trying to understand what love is, and there's like three amazing women he meets on this journey, you know, trying to clear themselves from a murder rap. So, yeah, it's got some good, you know, I tried to kind of combine the 90210 kind of ethos as far as, you know, romance and kissing is good and all that stuff that we believe in with an adventure story, not overly heavy, not raunchy like my other novels. And just kind of really try to entertain, which is what I was trying to do.
Marlene says she's ordering this book for my beach read on the Cape. So
it would look very good at the beach or in a pool. The colors are wonderful.
And it's called The Pool Guy's Kid. I mean, it's
exactly. And you know, I'm hoping I need people to review it. Obviously, I need some support. I want to see if we can get it going a little bit. I've already finished the second one, I have to say.
There's a follow-up already ready. Now, Chuck, you had some questions.
It took a year to come out. After I wrote it, it took another year because I got, and the publishers, you know, they take a long time.
Will the next one come out in quicker, or does it just take that long with them?
I don't know. You know, depending on how this one opens up, I guess, in a way. I mean, my publisher says she wants to do it, but she wants to look at the numbers, too.
Who did this art here?
Art is beautiful.
A girl named Annalisa. You like that?
Let's shout out Annalisa.
Who works with them? Who works with the company in Lexington?
Again, this is a small publishing, independent publishing house, Virginia Underwood publisher out of Lexington, Kentucky, who became fans of mine from a play I wrote called Search Paul Clayton, which is about an early late 50s folk singer. And her husband, Virginia's husband, is a professor at University of Kentucky, and he teaches a lot of folklore stuff, or he had, especially murder ballads, and we just became friends. And when I wrote this thing, I was looking for a publisher. I wrote it, you know, to see if she knew any young adult ones, and she read it and said, no, we would like to do this. So I liked her, and it's been fun. She's been really good.
I would not pitch in this whole – the fact that it's clean and not raunchy does not mean it's a young adult novel.
No, you've
got too many other kinds of characters. I mean, yeah, it's one of the things. I mean, this one, I'm not saying this is it. I'm not giving anything away. But you know what? In 90210, or even better, if anybody knows the TV show Northern Exposure.
I've heard of it.
There was a the character who was the bush pilot, Fleischman and whatever her name was.
Janine Turner.
Janine Turner was the actress. Rob Morrow is the actor. But with Janine Turner's character, if you kissed her, you died. And I actually, that was my biggest contribution to Northern Exposure. I was very sick. We had to put, and so was Karen, we had to put Lindsay on a plane with our friends home from Park City skiing. We were too sick to ski. We were too sick to pack. We were fucking sick. And we... And that's when I came up with the idea, anybody who kisses her is just going to die, you know, because, and it, in Larry's book, and this is a perfect one like that, I was going to use Brandon going crazy. If you kiss him, the girl's going to go crazy or have something. This one is, if you're in here, hold on, hope you make it to the end of the book. There's a lot of people that just bite the dust, as it were, in so many different ways.
It's kissing and killing. It's kissing and killing.
Oh, I love it.
These other kissing characters. Now, how did you come up with the name? One of his characters is named Hartunian. Where did you come up with the name Hartunian? I know the Hartunians.
Well, Rob Hartunian was an accountant who played on our hockey team, the Hollywood Hockey Club. So basically,
and he was local. He was local, right?
Yeah, he was a local guy, probably West LA guy. I think it was my friend Lionel's accountant.
His nephew played with Avery on the same All-Star team in baseball, and his father owns a lot of apartments in the Valley, and was O.J. Simpson's next door neighbor.
Oh wow!
I do remember that.
And I'm not going to mind because I know that I've heard from other people who are in the same profession that he is certifiably crazy, but very successful. So good for you. But yes, did you use the name Hartunian? I love that. People read this. That's an authentic LA name. It was a good choice on that one. And all of them, they're a very interesting group of characters. They felt very real. It's a good dynamic. I'm almost finished with VJ. So I've got two more. This blonde, I don't know who the hell. I haven't met the blonde yet here on the cover, but I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Is she the Justess Machina? Is that the one who comes in at the end?
No, she's in quicker than that. Yeah, you might have already met her, actually.
Okay.
Lisa says, it's a great book. Lucky for me, I already read it. Hello, Lisa. and she wants to get coffee with you, Larry.
Lisa is acknowledged as an early reader on that. Thank you very much.
A lot of us are waiting for the book, Larry. What's going on with Amazon? What's happening?
Its stock is going up, but its distribution seems to be slow. Like I said, I ordered the first day, pre-order just to get the system going. And it said mine was going to come July 17th, but it came yesterday. So I don't even know what to say.
Mine will be here tomorrow. We should do a whole book mania on this.
I do appreciate it. People read it, they should review it. We don't need to overdo it. But yeah, I'm really glad. I wanted to delight Chuck, obviously. Yes. And Brian and my fellow. I dedicate it to the 90210 fans across the world because I kind of decided that's why I would write this kind of book, just because I wanted to write something else, and I just thought that
I'd like to read a passage that I'd like to read a passage that was I knew there'd be something like it, maybe, because Larry has, you know, written the books, all these other books that he's had, and there's never been a Chuck character. So it was about he's going to do this one, you know, maybe. So this is where it is. The guy says, "I had taken." How do you pronounce your name?
Aura.
Aura. I've taken Aura to the Venice fishing pier as a safe harbor until we knew more. I admit I was not taking any chances. North of the pier, it's locals only surfing. And one of the old wetsuited men came out of the water. I recognized as Chuck, a friend of Duke's. Duke is the pool guy. He let me use his cell so I didn't have to use mine. While Chuck flamed up a doobie the size of a Cuban cigar, I was able to safely text Lutitia. And the show moves on, but, you know, I'm now in the book. I'm in the book.
You come back again during a bum fight, like one of your favorite things in the parking lot.
That's wonderful.
I got something to look for. But it really is a really fun and very... Where are the apartment, the Los Altos apartments, the one?
The original Los Altos there on Wilshire Boulevard.
Where is that?
Like kind of like mid-city Wilshire Boulevard. I have to quickly check in my map here. But
it's down by MacArthur Park. It's going like down there.
Not that far. You know, closer to your temple, actually, as I remember.
Korea.
And, you know, it's a classic kind of a Mediterranean style building. Let me see if I can pull it up something real quick here.
I want to address this question to someone I just saw ask this question. And how do you like Jenny developing an entire lifestyle brand around the one she's talking about the episode where Kelly has to choose between Brandon or Dylan? I choose me as the lifestyle brand. And I wanted to say that when Jenny was doing that, I connected her to Jessica Klein. She asked to speak to Jessica Klein, and Jessica Klein loved it. She was all about it. She was excited by that, and
Jenny really Jenny's a mensch, and she reached out to Jessica on that. I knew that.
Yeah.
And Jenny was when Jessica passed, you know, a very hot day in the summer. Jenny was there, and that was a day my granddaughter got very, very sick, and that whole community prayed for my granddaughter, and it would always be appreciated. And no, Jenny was very, very close, and I. And, you know, people, branding is a really an important part of commerce. It always had been in the 20th century, but even more so in the 21st century, as that people are branding themselves, whether they be life coaches or podcast people, yeah, or they're making stands for themselves like you guys are. And, you know, I don't begrudge someone for.
No, I think it's great that she.
No, but I mean, the question, the underlying tone of the question was judgmental.
A little bit,
absolutely.
Well, you know, I mean, that's where you must encounter that a lot, Brian, when you read the stuff that you know that people, and it's unfortunately, it is a sign of the times we're in that people are itching for that kind of anonymous confrontation.
Yeah,
they're itching for it. They're hungering for it. They want to. I'm mad about it. Well, guys,
it's okay. It's great for her. She's doing wonderful with it. So,
hey, the Los Altos are in Larchmont, Chuck. 4100 block of Wilshire.
Nice. Oh,
by the way, Larry, I do want to point out. I read the first couple chapters or so. I like little the Lorca reference.
Which one?
The Lorca reference, where the protagonist, he sees one of the girls reading a book by Lorca.
Exactly.
He gets a little starstruck.
Yes, definitely. No, I have a little bit of Chilean stuff.
It would not be a Larry Mullen book if there wasn't some passages about Bukowski. Bukowski
has to be in
the firmament. He's going to be there. and deservedly so.
What's the point of writing if you can't amuse yourself?
Absolutely. I agree.
On the Patreon, Brian and I have been watching. We watched The Love Boat, which was fantastic.
I got Pete into The Love Boat.
Oh, I'm full throttle. I think The Love Boat needs to come back. It's one of the best shows ever on television.
Well, like I said, if you want to meet Ted Lasso, I know Ted.
Yeah, we're going to do that. And then we watched an episode of The Twilight Zone, the one we talked about here on the podcast. And so Brian and I have been watching old Pluto shows.
Well, wait a second. If you guys are going to do that, I'll reconnect you with Brad Gross. Brad Gross, when they took the boat on the trips, he was on the boat.
Oh my God.
That's crazy.
This is amazing.
That's how he was spelled. He was spelling approved when we were here.
Oh, wow.
I didn't have any problem. Brad wanted to direct. I mean, they wouldn't have given him a problem anyway.
It would be such a great show.
The guy Art Bear, the writer Art Bear. I remember him. He was a good guy.
They did 9 seasons of this show, of The Love Boat, and they came up with 3 plots for every episode of The Love Boat. And some of them are very complicated. Who do I got to remember? Who's kissed this one? Who's with who? I just saw one with Robert Reed.
Guys. Wait a second. We're talking The Love Boat.
Yes.
What was The Love Boat really about?
I don't know. The guest stars. Oh yeah, that's what makes it so
funny. They brought back every single guest star, any out of work actor who was in the
Andy Warhol.
This is why the show had come back.
Andy Warhol. Everybody, it was that. Who's on the show tonight? You did not fucking care. Who Dave Soupy Sales is on the show tonight.
Yes, Soupy Sales.
Is on the show tonight. I someone like Judy Garland wasn't going to come on Aaron Spelling's show, but you know, certainly and Jackie Collins were on it before Dynasty. You know, I mean,
the Brady Bunch, Florence Henderson,
of course,
Robert Reed did it.
This was a high income. You know, being a guest star, Dollar went a much farther, and they all would do it, and Aaron made it a safe place for them, and you know, and they just loaded it up. Until they went on the road with the ports of call shows, they did it all in the same studio in West Hollywood where our first 90210 offices were.
Wow.
They didn't go anywhere. They just made you believe they were everywhere.
I mean, I believe that they're on a boat. I don't even want to have that destroyed for me. Karen Rosen says hi, guys.
Hi.
She said hi, and that's it. I think we've covered it this week. Brian, do you have anything else? Any other things?
How long have we been doing this?
You know what? I do want to plug. As you guys know, I do the Reddit page for 90210. My friend Tommy and I have started 2 new pages for all the people listening that are big soap fans. There's a new page for Dallas as well as Falcon Crest.
Falcon Crest.
Yeah, Dallas one is.
Do you have a Love Boat page?
I'm sure there's probably already one up. That seems like that has like a big cult following. Probably has one up already.
It needs to come back. How many 90s and 2000s guest stars would be amazing on a new Love Boat?
Yeah.
They did one called The New Love Boat. They already did. They've tried it.
They've tried it. It's hard. There's a lot of different ways that you can. I was thinking about an international show. There's a lot of ways to do international shows. You would make this one different in that regard. But
yes,
The Love Boat for sure. I mean,
let's bring it back.
You know,
Tori, let's bring it back. I want Tori to bring it back.
It's broadcast White Lotus.
I'll tell you something. Then you better be rooting for Barry Diller to buy the CBS.
Oh, that everybody.
Barry Diller was one of the things that these guys. I mean, me being a critic of network television and kind of, and it really happened after 9/11. Is that after 9/11 there were a lot of basically warm programming went out, and what came in place were procedurals where you really didn't have characters and you did this and you did, and it was this and it was crime and there were 12 variations of it and that became what it was. And tonally it created a shift as opposed to one that could have been a different shift. You know, there was a lot of power in those days about what you were putting on and what were the messages of those shows.
Yeah,
you know, I know this because our show was liberal. But anyway, that's for another time.
Well, Leah says, let me know when you do Facts of Life. So we will have
to... Oh, Facts of Life. We'll have to, you know, we'll have to do a podcast episode for the new Pluto one.
Yes, definitely.
We have to do Facts of Life too.
Facts of Life.
All right, you guys.
All right, guys, this was good seeing you guys.
Larry on, so we can talk about his auditioning process for Facts of Life.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you.
All right, guys, this has been great. We'll see everybody soon. It's the summertime, so sometimes we're not always together every week, but we'll be back on it soon enough. So, and don't forget to go to Amazon to get the Cool Guys Kid. Is there any other place that you prefer them to buy it, Larry? Is Amazon? Is there any place you prefer them to buy it?
I can buy it on Amazon. My publisher, Shadeland House Modern Press, but Amazon's the easiest. I guess Barnes and Noble's on.
Okay.
You know.
Just go look it up, Pool Guys Kid. All right, guys. Yeah, thanks so much. See you. Everybody.
Thanks, everybody, guys.
Soon, and let's go, Mets. Well. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.